Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Five podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington, and I'm chatting with my good friend, Kevin Sebesta. And he and I have been on hikes and hung out at different events over the last few years, but I believe it's the first time on the show, and I'm excited to have you on. How are you doing today?
Great. Thanks for having me. I always said if you need to kill time or fill some dead space, I'm available. Hopefully you could get something you could use that's entertaining. No education or advice, just entertainment. That's how I roll.
That's perfect. And yeah, you had plenty of free time. I sent you an email and you're like, we could talk almost immediately. So it's just been a couple of days, but I'm pumped because we have like a long list whenever we hang out and chat. We're like, oh man, we should have been recording this. It's so good. You feel energized afterwards. So we're going to hit a lot of stuff. And I mean, one cool thing is you've been retired for about 12 years. So I've learned a lot from you just in those conversations. For the folks that don't know you, can you give a quick intro, who you are, like what makes you tick? And then we'll get into a really just kind of a casual conversation. We got some bullet points, but we're just going to see where it goes. But who are you, Kevin?
Well, I always say I'm fired, but left my career when I was 43, 12 years ago. I'm 55 now. I kind of feel like I'm aging out of the whole retired early thing because, you know, I'm getting double nickels and it's like, I don't have the rule of 55 because I didn't work long enough. And I'm just a normal guy. My wife and I have been married 30-ish years. We've been together forever. We live in the same starter house. We used to buy three-year-old cars, drive them 10 years. Just the simple spending structure. We lived a great life. We didn't sacrifice much. What we did was we learned to live off one income and save the other one, basically, in case one of us lost our job, because I worked in corporate America and they would have layoffs where one person out of the four people in the cubes would disappear on a Friday. I went through that like four times in 18 years, and I was never the person that left, even though I volunteered the last time and they told me I didn't qualify. I was a critical resource. But I learned a lot. Saving since I was a teenager, part of my paycheck. I was a computer guy, never like tied to my work career as my identity, which we'll talk about probably as a whole. And I kind of do what I want. And so I like hanging out with other five people who are just taking on life for the good stuff that they have, whether they're working or even after work. So that's kind of how I got where I'm at.
And true to the show, we're going to focus a lot on the post-fi stuff because the saving part, like you said, you worked in computers, something, whatever, that was a long time ago, and you weren't super into your identity or your career as an identity. So, I mean, I think you covered that and we're not really going to talk about it. However, you and I, our households have a similar thing. We're child-free, and that's something that maybe isn't covered as much because kind of the traditional family is one that has the most focus. And there's a lot of conversation about that. So because you and I don't have kids, our conversation here is going to be a little bit, it's focused on that because it's our own experience. So that'll be something we're going to get into. Now, I'm going to switch gears. You just got back from a big trip. So give us tell us where you went, give us a couple highlights. And I'll leave it open. So,
my wife and I got kind of a last minute cancellation trip to go to Morocco with Kristen's five friends travel. We signed up on the wait list and then someone canceled. So we got offered to go. And Morocco's not somewhere we would normally go by ourselves. It's not somewhere we've never taken like an organized tour. So knowing we had a bunch of friends going and it was led by Kristen, and Five Friends Travel has just great trips that she's been scheduling. And if you don't know Kristen from the show or others, she is living an adjusted schedule working life and works weekends and has the weekdays off. So she likes traveling. So we said, why don't you coordinate trips so that we can go since you love traveling and people will sign up. And she did that. She did Portugal and we did Morocco and she has a cruise coming up with 50 or 60 of us. She's going to Turkey. all kinds of trips. And so it turned out there was 17 of us. I knew about 9 people. My wife went with me. This is the first time she went with a Phi activity. And I told her, everyone's cool. You'll be fine. Well, she loved it. Everyone was awesome. And we did, God, I don't know, 10 days, 13 days, something in Morocco. We did like a reverse sea from Casablanca to the middle of nowhere to Sahara Desert and back to Marrakech, roaming around the country with 17 of us and just amazing adventures. Kathy and I did not get sick from the camel milk or the crazy food or any of the other stuff going around, which was a miracle. So it was an adventure, and we have probably lifelong friends. And like, I mean, it sounds crazy, but I couldn't recommend her trips higher. Oh, the cool part about it was, it was comfort level. So it wasn't like base level. It was like the step up. She had nice riads that we stayed in. We stayed in nicer hotels. Let's say the nicer hotels, which had electricity when they were built in the 50s or 60s. Versus the ones next door that may not have, and then maybe haven't been touched since that, but they were the nicest ones around. So it was nice travel with amazing friends to a crazy historic location.
Very cool. And I'll give a quick little backstory. You could fill in some gaps, but the camel milk thing, some folks that went on the trip, other friends of the show, Darren and Jolene, mentioned that you had the opportunity to have some camel milk, and many people partook. Maybe you just had like an ounce or two. Many people got sick, and obviously, I don't know, maybe it was sitting out for a while. It's like lumpy camel milk. I don't know.
We didn't even know about it, Kathy or I, but it was 4 p.m. warm end of day camel milk in the middle of like, on the edge of the Sahara. Yeah. Nothing about that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. But once in a lifetime, and I don't know, I maybe, well, actually knowing the story now, I would probably skip it, but I could imagine I'd be like, yeah, I don't really have the opportunity to get it straight from the camel out here in the sand. So, okay, very cool. Now, one thing I thought of while you were talking about that, you mentioned making lifelong friends, just going on the trip, and we're middle-aged. Actually, that's pretty generous. We're past middle age, especially you, Kevin. No offense. But
I'm now, like Mark Chapman says, I'm closer to 60 than I am 50.
Yeah. 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 So we're getting older, and it's tougher to make friends. Like, we're not in the normal situations, and then people kind of get set in their ways a little bit. So it's tougher to like have those deeper relationships. But one great way is having either a trip or spending time together away from your normal home and routine where you're together like a lot. There's kind of no substitute to that face-to-face time, even if it's like economy, the conference where you're around even for a short time. But when you're put on the other side of the world and you're dealing with, there's always challenges with travel or delays or whatever. Can you talk about that a little bit? Like, what have you observed in your 12 years of retirement and like building friendships that can last, that you're going to, both parties are going to put in the effort to make that a friendship?
You know, that's a good question. It's interesting to me because my whole life, I'm an only child. And so my whole life, I've always done my own thing. And I've always just kind of, I've had friends and I could do things with friends and I could say, let's do something, but I didn't really do that much. And for the first 10 years in retirement, well, that's another interesting thing. When I worked, like everyone go out to happy hours and stuff. And I was like, I didn't do that. I went and did my own thing when we were traveling for work. I've been around the world twice for work and Europe multiple times. And so I'd always do my own thing because I didn't really want to see the inside of a bar. At 5, 6, 7, 8 o'clock at night, I'd go see other things. And so in retirement, I was 43. So I always kind of did my own thing or with my wife, and we never traveled to anybody. And then I met more friends through the Rock Retirement Club. We started having monthly Zoom calls just to check in and run ideas on things and optimization and what are you thinking about life stuff. And then we scheduled a trip, or we stayed after the yearly conference for a few days. And then we scheduled a trip to meet up in wherever it was, California or Arizona or something. So I started traveling. Well, we did a cruise with this group, and then they did another trip. And so the group is called the Slackers. A lot of people know them. It's just a group that got together that's like, everyone was talking about purpose and passion. They were like, I don't really have a purpose. I'm just a slacker, a high achieving slacker. I don't know if that's true, high achieving or slacker. And so it kind of formed naturally, this group that did things. And then going to events, other people would do things. Like Mark Troutman and I were telling Amy, really, we want to go to Bali, but we don't know how to do it. We're freaked out by getting over there. And so she said, I'll help you guys or whatever. And then she decided to put something together and we signed up right away. And so we suggested to Amy, try this for Bali. Go ahead, try it for Bali. And then we suggested to Kristen, yeah, just schedule the trips. People will sign up. And maybe part of that came out of Stephen's Camp Fi stuff, where like people will sign up and do things. He just set up New York City and it sold out 60 something people. And so I was talking with Stephen Boyer and I said, you know, you're the average of the five people you hang around with. And he said, no, you're the average of the five people you hang around with. And that's brilliant, because the five people I hang around with are adventurous. We're learning how to spend some of our savings better now in these go-go years. I call them the mojo, like the extra bonus years. And so if you hang around with people that are doing trips, you want to do trips with them, because people ask me, where are you going on this cruise? And I'm like, I know where I start, but I have no idea where it stops. I just know I'm going with eight people. And so we scheduled the Polynesian Tahiti cruise for January 2027. And we've just been letting people know, like, we're going on this like luxury cruise for 2 weeks and it's pretty expensive. But if you're interested, you should do that, because it's going to be like, there's about 20 of us now going. And that's not coordinated by anybody. And so it's who you hang out with, who you want to hang out with. And that's how some of those events happened in Bali, happened in Morocco, which I used to get Morocco and Monaco confused. Not anymore. One of them is dusty and one of them is pretty glitzy. And oh, and the other thing I was going to say is, I say it in my introduction at Camp Fi most of the time, is that the people here, you meet these people and you become friends kind of, but you become like Fi family. And what happens is you go to different events and you see different people that you've seen from other events. And it's like each Fi event is like a family reunion. And it's kind of like you see your Fi cousins, like people you don't see all the time. You see them at some events. Some of them are just amazing and some of them you don't really get along with. You don't really want to hang around with. Like that happens. I know people. I'm called Too Much Kevin for a reason, so people don't want to hang out all the time. So it's like a family, and then you have adventures. There were people exchanging, bartering medications in Morocco. Like some people had the good pills with like their name on the bottle, like super antibiotics, and they're like negotiating two or three of these other pills. And it went in a fun, funny way, but like everybody came through and helped everybody else. Sure. And other strangers on the trip would have done that over time, but we did that from the first second. Even if we were going to give away our stuff, we would figure out as a group how to replenish that if we needed our stuff later, rather than just depleting your antibiotics and just being stuck.
Got it.
That family.
Okay. Well, a couple quick housekeeping with Amy Minkley, right? And what's her event called?
Fi Freedom Retreats with an S, I believe.
Okay. And people could look this up. We'll probably link it up. I think many of these events like sell out quick, but get on the wait list. Sometimes availability comes up last minute because people book it like a year plus ahead of time and their plans may change. So same with like Kristen's trips. Occasionally something comes up and people have to cancel at the very last minute.
They're hard to get on. You have to say hell yes right away.
Yeah. And there's a list of, it's similar to, I believe, like the economy wait list. Like the tickets sell out quick, but many do come available as you come up to the date. So with that said, you mentioned maybe like the first 10 years of your retirement, you were kind of just doing things on your own. Did you have like a realization where you're like, oh, this community stuff, I need to pay a little more attention to it, or did it kind of naturally happen because of the Rock Retirement Club and the Slackers, and you just started making friends with those folks because of the amount of time that you were spending chatting with them?
It just, things happen over time. I definitely do believe in this whole hell yes thing. It's like, if it seems okay, well, you consider it, but if it's like interesting, just go for it and jump into it. Most people don't, I don't think, regret so many things they do. They just get bummed out if they miss something. Like, I didn't want to, I found out about the Tulip Cruise because someone mentioned it was, this is Kristen's Five Friend Travel Amsterdam Tulip Cruise. I think it was going to be a beer cruise, and now it's tulip time, so they're doing beer on the end. But I found out about that. I'm like, wait, I didn't hear about that. And so then Kristen apologized to me. Oh, I thought you couldn't go because you were helping your mom, because my mom has Alzheimer's. And now I have a friend in the community, Victor, whose mom lives with my mom and helps her. And so she's an angel. So even through the community, it's helped my family, which has helped my mom, which has helped us, which helped us travel, which helps us stress less. So it's like this huge circular thing. There was no realization. It's just like different opportunities, being out there exposed to people. Like I said, I'm an introvert. Like I could spend, when my wife's with her family in Michigan for the summer, like I could spend 2 weeks not talking to anybody. Like I'm the guy at the gym that like sees everybody all the time, you know, twice a week for 20 years. And I don't say anything to anybody. And then one day we're at the Toyota dealership because we have a new Toyota. That's a whole nother thing, buying a new car. I said hi to the guy. I go, hey, how you doing? She's like, who's that? I go, oh, I see him at the gym all the time. Oh, yeah, what do you guys talk about? I go, I've never talked to him at the gym in like 10 years, but I see him at work and I say hi. So it's like the Phi community, that's where it's like family, because you feel comfortable talking. And one thing we said before we started recording was, like, we kind of just go deep right away. It's not this surface talk of, hey, did you see the latest ball sport on TV? And how's that going? And like Chris Luger says, ball sport. But we just go deep. It's like, what are you thinking about? How are you structuring your spending now in this go-go period versus saving it until you're 84 and you're like, uh-oh, I should have spent this. And balancing that and knowing what's available and knowing who to do things with and how to give now versus to give when you're dead, warm hand versus cold hand. There's all these things that we talk about. And I think it's because it's family, and you don't talk about, not, you could talk about numbers, I guess, to people, but each situation's so unique, it just complicates the perspective, I think, if you talk numbers. But you could talk about gifting and sharing and spending and saving and Roth converting and tax brackets and all kinds of things. And we go deep, and people often say that to me, and they're like, you just jump right in with the questions. And I'm like, yeah, we need to in this community. And, you know, that makes me think about the child-free topic we were talking about, how so much planning is revolved around the family structure, getting to Phi, the structure of while you're in Phi or FIRE, if you have like education expenses, and then the estate planning where you have heirs. And for child-free people, it's kind of different. I mean, if you don't spend your money, the hogs will. And I talk about the hogs, which are heirs, organizations or charities, and the government. And I really think those are the three places that your money will go after you pass away. And for child-free people, our heirs are not clearly defined. And so then you always hear child-free people say, well, my nieces and nephews, well, they're going to have a windfall of something, something they weren't. You always hear about those. My aunt, I didn't know, left me $500,000 or something weird. But we didn't realize this was such a strange topic until we tried to do our estate planning and to create our trust and to have distributions to the charities, the family, and figuring that out. Do you guys have a trust, or are you doing it through a will? Or how are you, just on a high level, have you thought through what's left and how you're going to do that?
We have a will currently, but it's been on our list for a little while, like over a year, to get the trust going. And in like, that's the better way to organize things. You have a little more control, and it's a little more, I believe, more efficient for like just getting through things like through probate, like it avoids some of those things. I probably have details wrong, so check with your professional, but we have thought about it. And to your point, like it's a little bit, it's not as clear. So we're like, is this a smart way to do it? And our nieces and nephews and our siblings and stuff, which knock on wood, everybody seems fine and they don't need anything. But at the same time, we're like, is that really where we want our money to go to? Or do we have some other greater idea, some greater purpose, which we may get to, but we don't necessarily, because some people maybe would be like, library is so important to me and I want to like give everything to the library or to the Humane Society or something like that. Yep. So it does make it a little more complicated from the just planning perspective. So yeah, what have you guys, did it take you a while to determine like how you wanted to allocate?
It was so, it seemed simple enough, but it was complicated. So I'm an only child. So my mom's a widow. So she has some money saved. So I'll inherit that. So what we structured is basically the last person standing, if it's me or if it's my wife or if it's my mom, our trusts are the same, where one third of each person's wishes, or each person's wishes equal one third of the total leftover value. So my mom's wishes to give it to whatever family she might want and whatever charity she wants will get one third, even if Kathy's the last one. And then if I'm the last one, then I would give one third to Kathy's wishes, one third to my mom's wishes, and one third to my wishes. And that's how we structured that. If you're just a couple and you don't have that situation, you might do half and half or something. And so Kathy and mine overlap to her nieces and nephews, because I'm an only child. And so they're going to get a certain percentage each. And then we have different charities we're giving. But what's interesting is we did it in 2018. And I think she had four charities and I had maybe four or five. A couple of those are dropping off the list in our vision. And so we need to update it, which isn't too hard to update. But getting more optimization, which even though I'm a slacker, and we could talk about optimizing of everything, becomes less important as you go through retirement. You should spend more time optimizing your living and less time optimizing your numbers and your structure. The qualified accounts, the 401ks or whatever, 403bs, or if you get those into traditional IRAs, those have advantages to go to charity because the charities get those dollars tax-free. So in theory, we should send those straight to the charities somehow, so that we don't have anyone has to pay taxes and give them the after-tax amount. Whereas the brokerage accounts can step up in basis, or Roths, which are already zero tax in the future, can go to people versus organizations. And so we're kind of calculating through that. One thing that's nice, the way I understand it is a trust is like a legal entity that can hold assets, and it can receive assets by titling them in the trust name and be distribute those immediately like a pass-through trust, or over time if you had minor children or someone you wanted to give payments to for a longer period of time, or a surviving spouse where you do HEMS, which is health and education maintenance or something. And so that's a lot of reason people use the trust, is to distribute control over immediately or time. But there's so many types of accounts that you can have a beneficiary on that's a legal agreement between you, the account holder, and the institution, the custodian. So retirement accounts have beneficiaries that go directly with a certificate of death, go directly to the beneficiaries, no government involved, like no courts involved. If you have banks, brokerage accounts, they have payable on death, transfer on death. That's a legal agreement with you and the custodian that goes straight to them. Homes can have like beneficiary deeds or titles, special titles that have beneficiaries, and even vehicles now. So to me, it seems like if you have assets that are titled in an account name, many types can actually have a beneficiary document tied to them. And so they automatically go to who you choose. And it's assets that are titled that do not have beneficiaries that would go through the court system and a will. And so our will is a pour-over will, that anything that doesn't have a beneficiary would drop to the will and have to be proven in probate at court. And what was I thinking? So I think that really is a very interesting system that you don't have to have a trust, but you have to divide it out. Like this traditional IRA would go to these three charities or four charities, two are my wife's and two are mine. So that's what we tried to figure out and try to dig into it. And it's just super complicated for after death.
Right. Now, as far as like being child free, like how much do you think it played in as a factor to like retiring early? Do you even think about that? Because some people maybe that are chasing early retirement, they're like, you guys did it because you don't have kids and it's like way cheaper and simpler. So do you have any thoughts on that?
I think now kids are really expensive with travel, sports tournaments and things, and doing things all their friends are doing, when all your friends' parents are probably spending all of their salary or more, that'd be really hard to have your kid fit in. If I had a son, I don't know if it'd change much, because I'd probably be a hard ass. If I had a daughter, she would have everything she wanted, I guess. But I don't envision being a parent ever did. So just kind of worked out that way. Plus, we live in our same starter house since 91. That's almost 35 years. And we wouldn't have lived in a 1,000-square-foot house if we had a kid or two.
Yeah, so, yeah. Interesting. Okay, so that's crazy. So when you bought the house, did you think we're going to be in this house for a very long time?
No, my wife had it when I met her. And I was like, yeah, it works for me. It's in a great location. It's three houses from a giant 17,000, 20-mile city park where I can run and mountain bike and hike. And it's kind of on a quiet street, and there's a wash behind us, so it's kind of private. And so it was good enough. I mean, that's probably my whole life is like, it's good enough. I'm good with that. I'm happy where I'm at. I find my superpower is I'm happy where I'm at, whatever's going on. I'm just good with that. And you know what? We live large in a small scale. Like we have a tiny home. We have a small home. We have like a trailer at the beach. So we have little things that add up to being an amazing life, but aren't very expensive. And we buy off peak, which makes a huge difference too. So when we bought our new Toyota, it was December 2020. Nobody was driving because of COVID. Gas was super cheap. Toyota was trying to give away hybrids. So we bought a hybrid then, and we bought our California place in spring of 2012 when the market was still down really bad. And that's gone through the roof, but it just kind of planning ahead. I mean, it's delayed gratification in some ways. And yeah. I don't know how you can do delayed gratification on children, because in some ways you can, but if all their friends are going to a soccer tournament, it's going to cost $2,000 to get there and do that. You can't, it's not really fair to say, no, you're going to be an outcast because I'm a cheap ass.
Yeah. And, you know, I try not to give advice way out of turn, as I don't have kids. But one observation that I have recently, we were back in Atlanta over the Thanksgiving holiday, friends of friends or whatever, some folks that we know, they're sending their kids to a private school. They're pretty young. I think they're in elementary school, but I think it's something like $30,000 per kid. I mean, that's a dramatic, huge amount. And maybe it'll pay off in the long run somehow, or I don't know. Those folks are still working. They have a big house or sending their kids to that's way more. I think my whole college education costs like $30,000. Like
exactly.
With all of my expenses. But
dude, you're getting old too. Those are like, that's olden times. I mean, that was that was in the 1900s, right?
It was in the 1900s. Yes.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. That's back in the 1900s when you went to college.
So it can be super expensive, but like everything, there's a range. So people can travel the world on a very small budget if they're willing to make some compromises, or they could spend extravagantly and travel in a bigger way. And actually, that's something we could get into here. So I think famously, correct me if I'm getting this a little wrong, but it was you and Mark Troutman chatting, and you talked about the fun bucket. Not completely novel, right? I mean, the idea was around, but you put a fun name around it, and you guys have been talking about it for a few years, and it's catching on. So did I get it right? And can you talk about how you've started spending a little bit more, maybe on fun things, maybe on travel, and any adjustments you've had to make, like, psychologically?
Yeah. It's talked about all over. He was visiting with me a couple days before Camp Fi in 2021 in San Diego at our little beach trailer, which is pretty cool. And he'd been retired a few years, and I'd been retired a few years. And I said, you know, have your accounts gone up more than you planned in the first 5 years of retirement? He's like, yeah. And he goes, it's been a good tailwind. And I said, yeah. I said, I think you need to take some of that and have a fun bucket. And he's like, what's a fun bucket? So I said, like, it's this freedom to spend. You set aside this money, and the goal is to actually spend it. And it's kind of like my play check, which we talk about, where it's money that's designed to be spent that's not allocated for something else. And one thing I didn't talk about in the travel was the one reason we went to Morocco. Well, there's so many reasons we went to Morocco, but we wanted to do the harder trips now when we're younger, like Morocco or maybe Asia or maybe Pompeii. We've been to Pompeii, you know, you got to climb over all these stones and stuff, and then save easier trips like traveling through Spain on the trains and stuff where the cities are newer. Well, not newer, but they're more modernized. And then when we get older, maybe we do things like London and Paris, which we've done because they're easier to get around. And then when we get older, we do like national parks. Not to say, Doug, you're old and your national park sticker water bottle.
Come on,
but still,
man.
I know exactly. Like you're out there with the grandpas. I know there's your bottle. And mm-hmm. There's the chapters of life, the times of life. The Die with Zero book really talks about the ability to do things at different phases of your life. And sometimes the ability to spend and reward yourself for that is a thought now. And Mark Troutman and I both used a retirement planner, not a financial planner, but specifically a retirement planner that specializes in people that are retired or about to retire and figuring out how to build a safety floor, which is called the minimum dignity floor with the Retirement IRA show, Jim Saulnier and Chris Stein, or with Roger Whitney, Rock Retirement Club, Retirement Answer Man, Base Great Life, and how you secure that stable core part of your living, food, utilities, transportation, housing, and healthcare. So you know that that's covered through end of plan, which is death. It's a nice way to say death. End of plan with inflation adjustments. And that money is kind of set aside for your base living structure. And then you have things like aging assistance, what that might be, any special inheritance or special needs children. You could set aside a buffer if you're like, you don't want to spend it all. And then whatever's not tied to that becomes your fund number. Like money that you've oversaved at this moment that's not tied to your core living through life or the aging or the required expenses for family inheritance or children. And that fund number is kind of what we tweaked into our yearly spending. And so that number, I did my plan in 24, April 2024 was when we got our results from our plan. Mark was a few months after that. And they just said, you underspent your first 10 years of retirement. And I said, well, you say that now because you've seen what the markets have done and what we've spent. You didn't know that going in when I was 43. Like, right. I'm not going to spend an extra $30,000 a year on stuff when I'm 44, 45, because that's going to be big money in the future. And so they calculated that, and it was like just the freedom to spend pieces of the fun number, which we call the fun bucket. It's like a freedom to spend. So was it a mindset shift? Yes. Like not to spend, but to spend freely, to buy an e-bike and to spend the $1,400 on that was like something I didn't need. But I'm like, yeah, why not? I might use it. I'll roam around with it. And that just came out of the fun bucket, just like, well, or the paycheck, like nothing. And so there's things like that that are just easier. The trips, we fly in the front of the plane almost all the time now. And that is just obnoxious to turn left when you get on the plane and you have your reclining seats. And the price is just jaw-dropping when I actually click on purchase the ticket. But I did that when we went to Australia. I bought the ticket to go to Australia business class, which was outrageous. And we had a layover in LA, and I happened to look at Personal Capital when I was in LA just to see what my number was, because it's interesting. And then we were flying. I'm like, oh, I wonder, because we flew for like a day and a half, it seemed like. And then when we got to Australia, I'm like, I should check again. So we were waiting in the airport for the subway. And because I took the subway to get to the hotel and dragged my bag through Sydney down the streets instead of taking an Uber for $27, which is stupid. And the accounts had gone up more than the plane tickets while we were flying that day and a half. Mm-hmm. And so it showed, and they did go down after that, and they've since gone up even more. But it showed me that just the ridiculous amount of money that we spent on those tickets turned out to be irrelevant based off how much we saved for close to, well, it was 20 years together, 25 years before we even retired. So by saving all that time, it really builds this base. And for people that are retiring young, if you've been saving for a couple decades, you know how to spend logically based off of your money and your income. You're going to be fine in retirement. You're going to tighten up if you have to, and you're going to have freedom when you want it. And so it was a total mindset shift. Having professionals tell me what all my calculators told me was really amazing. And we've spent more now. We've spent four times as much each of the past 2 years in retirement as we spent for decades before. Mm-hmm. And our accounts are still up. And I still watch it, but it's...
Yeah, interesting. So many things to dig into. One is the concept around like time bucketing from Die with Zero. Again, not a novel topic.
I wish I had $500 million to write that book. Dude, yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah, it's a little easier. But the idea is exactly the same, where it's just like, okay, even though you were shitting on the national park stuff there for a second, I'll say there's a lot of them, and it's going to be a very long-term thing, but we will most likely, so we have a dog, Georgie, and we don't take big trips where we have to fly. We don't travel international. We take road trips, and she comes along with us. She's about 13. She won't be with us forever, and I know some of the first trips we're probably going to go on is the more difficult parks to get to. So there's some in Alaska where you have to get like a bush plane and fly out to, and like that sort of thing. And we have a lot of international interest in travel once we have a little more freedom. And I think we'll have a nice time. The cool part, one, we're sort of homebodies and similar to you. Like, I think we're pretty satisfied, or at least I am satisfied. Like, wherever I am, you could plop me down in, you know, a bigger city or a small, like, pretty small town, I could probably make it work. I just need a couple little things that are convenient. But
you know, part of it for some people that this think, some people call their pet aging family member when people right. mention, like, yeah. I can't travel, I have an aging family member, which is super true. Like, if you have a dog that owns you, like I did and you guys do, mm-hmm. That's a real thing. And so that changes things, but you can also have parent issues that start to hold you back. Like, because my mom has Alzheimer's, lives at home, and Victor's mom helps her. She just texted me something on the phone, and I'll figure that out. But like, you kind of wedge yourself, and people that have children have that piece, right? The sandwich generation. Well, I was sandwiched between my dog's assistance and my mom. And so that's the one thing that, and I think about, if my mom does go to a memory care, then I'll have her dog. So then I'll be in that same situation, which that dog's going to learn to love boarding, because I'm not going to be stuck around, because she's a wonderful dog. But the chapters of life have to do with your responsibilities and your abilities, both. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you're spending is, did you say like 4x more than you had been, like the baseline from way back?
call it the Roaring 20s, which I changed to the Raging 20s. So we started that in January 2020.
Oh, right.
We're like, let's just do a whole decade. Let's spend $1,000 more a month on anything we want. It's $12,000 a year. That's $120,000 over a decade. And it worked really good for 2 months, and then everything stopped. And then after COVID, the accounts had gone up, so we increased that number in 2022. And then in 2024, we had our retirement plan done through the Secure Income Retirement Plan that they talk about. And so we had a 2020 like freedom. We had a 2022 bigger freedom. We had a 2024 official fund bucket. And so that's why it's been so astronomical right now.
Gotcha. So, we talk about sort of value-based spending and maybe not buying stuff, although, you know what, like stuff is fun sometimes and it's okay to get it. But the question is, you've spent a lot more. Have you gotten the value that you think you should from that? Because some people are like, shit, that's crazy. So talk about the actual value, because a lot of it's experience, right?
I always hear that it's better to spend on experiences than things. And BJ was on the show with you guys.
Yeah.
He's like, I like things. And I'm like, hell yes, I like
things. It's okay.
Things. Yeah. It's okay. And so like my wife likes muscle cars. And so I call that the CAR ladder. Instead of having a CD ladder, we just move some of those accounts into cars. And then in theory, you could sell one here and there to pay for future bills. So she's not going to let me sell. But so like she loves those things and she drives around like once or twice a week in the car around the neighborhood, not the neighborhood, but out on the streets for like 20 minutes. And like, it just does her thing. Cause you don't need to drive those 69 Mustangs long ways because they wear you out. So we have things, we do things. It's funny because like when I bought, let's just say I update my watch or I get an e-bike. It's to me, that's a whole calculation of figuring out which product I want and making sure I buy it, delayed gratification. And that process of researching and decision-making is shrunk. And then I realized that's how most people live. They're just like, I want that bike. I'm going to get that bike like in an hour. And for me, it might take a week or two just to make sure it's what I want. But so and in the old days, I wouldn't have done that. I would have just decided for a longer period of time if I really want it and when was the best price and stuff. So I do like things. Right now I'm struggling. This is so ridiculous. So I needed to get the slip-in Skechers old people shoes for my mom, right? You've seen those commercials, old football players can't bend over, buy those shoes.
Okay.
So there I was buying her those and I saw they were on sale for me for $35 at Amazon. So I thought I'd try them out. So I get them and they're okay. I mean, they work. I don't really like them. They look like old man pillow shoes and they're $35. And so here I am trying to figure out, do I send them back or do I keep them? It's only $35. They kind of make sense. So I struggle over this stupid $35 purchase of, is it really valuable? Do I really need that pair of shoes? Do I like all this stuff? But I have no problem buying my wife a round trip business class ticket to Europe. So it's still you are who you are your entire life. The person you are when you're working is the person you will be after you stop working, after you no longer work. If you're nervous at work and stressed out, you're going to be stressed out and nervous at the beginning of your fire adventure, if that's what it is. If you're easygoing and flexible at work, you're going to start your retirement being flexible and easygoing. You can learn to adjust yourself and without the stress, maybe you will, but maybe you'll still be the same person. So that reinvention is true, but you are who you are. And I mean, all this time, I'm literally trying to figure out it's $35 plus tax. It's like $38. Like, how important is that in my shoes? I don't know. And I spent probably half an hour thinking about this $38 decision.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
I'm gonna suck it up and be wealthy and keep those shoes.
You could donate them. I was gonna say I'll go with shoes and then an Amazon thing. So I'm glad you told me this again. I'm learning, you know, you're wiser, much older than me. So I'm taking and learning these lessons. So I did buy a pair of shoes and later I was like, these are not as comfortable as I thought. And I think I'm just gonna donate them because I wore them like whatever, 3 or 4 times. Plenty of life and just like get them out of here. I don't need to like keep stuff that I'm not going to use around. The other, specifically around Amazon. So I could tell you, I was putting some new pickups and new wiring in a guitar. And I bought a switch.
Which we've all done.
Yeah, yeah. I started totally soldering some. And I got the wrong size switch. So I returned it to Staples along with a couple other, I can't remember what else I bought, but I returned it like three things. We just got an email back that they lost it. They were like, oh, you didn't return this. And I was like, oh shoot. I know that I saw the lady, she was like, which box do I put it in? It's lost in some Amazon warehouse or there wasn't a UPC. It's about $27. And I was thinking about it when I was walking Georgie today and I'm like, oh man, what am I going to do? Am I going to try to do a charge back on the credit card and really chase it? I'm just going to tell them, hey, it's in the warehouse. I took it to Staples and they put it in and then I'm going to move on with my life. It's $27 and it's probably not worth my time to get into a pissing match with Amazon about some fucking switch that's rolling around in a box.
You do the extra step of try to do the right thing and then just let it go. I agree with that.
Yeah. And it is tough because we understand intellectually the $30 that we're talking about. It's like, it's insignificant. It is a throwaway amount. However, we also understand we could go out and probably have a lunch for us and a friend. Like the opportunity cost of that $30 is a real thing that we can do. But at the same time, it's like, we don't have time to mess around.
Nowadays, right? It's not an or. At a level, when you start feeling comfortable, it's not this or that, it becomes and. And I think that's it's a really hard thing. And I'm quite frugal, but we still did everything, but it's still like each dollar spending was like a conscious effort. And it was mostly to get the right item. Like, I'm with you. If something like my wife will be balancing the medical bills and she's like, oh, there's a $17, and she'll call the dentist or whatever and just have them track three phone calls to track it down because she wants it right. And I'm just like, man, just let that go.
Yeah.
Because it's not gonna matter. And for me to say that, it's super hard. But that $20-something that Amazon lost, like your accounts probably go up that much walking to the bathroom.
Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. It's weird. And I think both of us acknowledge we're self-aware. This is a deep conversation, although I'm waiting 52 minutes. Like we understand this is like a advanced FI topic and we're very,
But you should live some of this intentional stuff before you reach your FI number. You shouldn't say, I don't want to go on that trip with my friends because it's going to cost $1,700. And I don't know if I should do that. But it's not like you're just going on a random, you're going to grow, you're going to gain, you're going to have family time. It's valuable. It's intentional. And that's a trip. So I think having a fun bucket while you're working, a freedom bucket, like this freedom to spend money, and Ramit, who's when he's not putting people down, he might say, what's the freedom to spend money for each of you? Is it $200 each a month? Like that's a freedom money. And if you're super fi, that's weird. You might say, okay, you have $10,000 this year of just freedom money of the fun bucket because you're 55 years old and here's $10,000, do whatever you want. I don't care. And what's fun, you don't need to, you probably don't even want to spend it. Just knowing I can drive any car I see on the street. Do I want those Corvette C8 that I see? No. But could I have one? Yes. Would I rent one like Carl? That's exactly my idea is like, just rent some of these cars for a day and then you could try them out. But I'm not a car person. There's different ways to satisfy that. The whole money, activity, interest stuff, and deprivation sucks. I mean, it's good it's like the military, I'm assuming, where they break you down and build you up. If you start your FIRE journey by cutting out all your bills and you're in debt and regrouping and starting to save and then building yourself up, you can start you do the hard stuff first and try to reset that threshold. Like they tell you, if you have too much salt in your body, just don't eat salt for a while, and then you won't want salt, or you won't want sweets if you stop. And mm-hmm. we hear the same stuff all the time. And I think it's all learning, and it depends who you're around. That's why I like hanging out with five people.
Right.
They almost always do things right, or better, or well, or in a different way that makes you think. And it's about the community that makes us better.
One great thing going back to spending is, like, most of the time you could test things out on a small scale. So if you're like, would that expensive car make me happy? Like you said, you could rent it, test it out and see. And maybe it's fun to rent a different car so you don't have to deal with the maintenance and the tires and the insurance and all the other kind of things that go along with it. Those are generally like less fun. So maybe you could just figure out the most fun portion and then rent to make that happen. Same thing with, like, some people were thinking, actually, I've heard this a couple times. I'm curious if you know of folks like this where they're like, I'm going to retire and then I'm going to travel. And then they start traveling, they have some fun first, but then they're like, actually, I don't want to travel this much. I want to be at home. Or maybe they try van life and they're like, this was much different than I expected. And they could have like tested out or maybe rented a van before they purchased one. And maybe they just want to do it for a few weeks each year. But have you seen people where they thought retirement was going to be one thing and then it was much different and they needed to adjust?
Yeah, I think that happens in so many different ways with so many people because they treat retirement, I call retirement leaving your main career, which is where your value is and probably your higher income. There's other careers, there's other employment. But I think they treat it like a light switch. Like Friday, you turn off the lights at the office, hand in your badge, and then on Monday, it's like the sun's shining and it's this great world and it's all new. And while it is, you're still the same person and you're going to do all these things. And so in the Rock Retirement Club, people talk about this and they talk about the journey to and through retirement. And boy, that even comes up with partners and spouses. Like all of a sudden, one spouse is at home, the working spouse office is home all the time explaining how things are done. Like that doesn't go over well for like the person that's been at home running it for decades, that all of a sudden they're told how it should be done. And there's crazy things like gray divorce is a huge thing because all of a sudden two people are together that didn't spend all this time together. And it's not just an hour getting ready in the morning and 3 hours in the evening. It's all day long, all week long. And we've seen divorces in the community because of different situations. That's disastrous for money. It's not the end of the world, but it's like, it's a disaster you can rebuild from, I guess. But we've also seen people that have had illness and deaths. And so there's so many different pieces that it's important to live. And so part of my talk at Camp 5 was, and we mentioned this, was I did a pyramid where what makes your soul happy? And that's the base of my pyramid I've learned over my life is you've got to do some things that make your soul happy. And if you could try RVing and you go in and like, oh, that didn't work out so well. Well, maybe you could have tried that differently. Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe it's not the end of the world. It's like boat ownership, right? People talk about the best days of your life for when you buy your boat and the day you sell it. Like, I don't know how you do that. Do you find a friend that has a boat? Do you find a friend that has an RV? Do you find friends that takes the trip so you just sign up on their trip so you don't have to plan anything? Just going with the flow works for me. I did a blog post called, and it's like wing it, where now I just kind of wing it. I just built my structure and I just kind of go with the way it is. And once you have that structure, it's been working out. I don't totally tweak or optimize it, but I'm not just flying with no idea. And so always people say, I want to travel when I retire. And there's some people it works out and some people it doesn't. Sometimes people want to go in a marriage or a partnership, people want to do different places, different times of the year, different levels of travel. And so just saying a married couple want to travel, there's like multiple variables in there that don't always line up. And so it's a fascinating thing. And cruise ships are pretty small if you got a small cabin. So that might drive two people crazy. You never know, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And one thing we've been doing is some individual trips where, like, we'll go meet up with our own friends, our individual friends, and then go somewhere else. So we get to check out different places. And I think that's in the last 2 years, we've been doing that a little bit more. Turns out to be great. And, you know, you get to experience a place in a different way when I'm not holding Elizabeth back. I'm sure she's having a great time. Like, she went to New Orleans with a friend, and yeah, it's just like they get to have that great quality time. So I think that's a way to do it. Yeah.
Great social piece for them too. Cause if you have a different social interaction when you travel with someone other than your partner, you have good memories when you travel. Well, you have opportunity for good memories when you travel together. Now that there's Google Maps and you're not trying to have someone read the map while you're driving in a strange city. I bet Google Maps have saved so many marriage vacation disasters.
Oh, man.
But, and just think about it, when you're traveling, she's having a wonderful time at home.
Right. Yeah. So that's something, and we don't have like a specific number of times, but it seems like maybe like a couple times a year for each of us. And we're trying to, you know, figure out like, oh, what's the right length? And I've gone to many, like, five events over the past few years. And I've been away from home a little more often. And I'm like, some of these, it's not as novel because I've been to a certain city like five times in a row. And I think I'm going to shorten some of those and maybe do some other trips instead. And I know for one, you don't go to FinCon typically. That's more creators. Okay.
Only once.
Great time. Can be lots of fun. Actually, I have a blast, but I've been the last several years, and it's going to be in Palm Springs in September of next year. And I was like, hey, wait a second, that's the desert, right? And I don't really like hot places so much. And I think, I mean, it'll still be like 100 degrees. And I'm like, you know what? I'll take a pause on that one. I'll see where it is the next year. Hopefully somewhere a little cooler. Like, it was in Portland this year, which was awesome. And I'm like, fuck the desert. I'm not going to go there. No offense. Because you live in the desert, right?
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's like 75 degrees right now. But see, what's good is you can preview the senior life when you're there. True. You should just like have like economy. One year they took a bus around to show people the rental property stuff. And you could, in economy or in FinCon, maybe they could just say, this is senior living. You could take a bus around to the senior places. That would be super cool.
Yeah, I'll do that in like whatever, December through February or something like that. But not, I mean, September, it gets cool some places, not in Palm Springs, I don't think. So no. I think it's a fine town. A lot of people really like it, right?
Yeah. And see, the secret is you live there in the winter, and then you have a summer place in the mountains. Like, there's different ways. It's not all about full homes, second homes. You can have smaller homes you can share with people or things. There's so many options that we could talk about in the community for adjustable lives. Like Airbnbs, now that those exist for travel, it's amazing. I heard Pete's going to join the Donegans in Colombia. Like, that's perfect. That's like joining a trip, makes it easy, to a new location in a bigger house that you don't have to stay in a hotel room with no kitchen or it's so different nowadays to travel. It's so many options. There's so many of us in the community that are traveling. You can join in. And then when you're there, you could do separate things as well. No one cares. So it's not like you're tied together, which you would think, until you've done it a few times.
Right. And that's great. I was going to say, like, you know, you mentioned the cruise and like Kristen's trips, but your other cruises that you're going on, I mean, there's people that you know, and you're not going to hang out with everybody all the time. And there's not programming, right? So it's just like you do, like, on the unorganized trips, you're doing whatever you want. And you don't have to, again, you don't have to hang out with everybody all the time. It's just like whatever you want to do. You need some downtime. You want to be more social. You want to meet other random people on the boat. Like, that's cool. Just a friend you haven't met, right? Is that what they say?
No way. It's a stranger. It's a stranger you have to small talk to. Small talk sucks.
Yeah, that is true. There was a stretch, I may have mentioned it on a show, but I was just like, I went to way too many things where there was small talk happening. and it wore me out a little bit. And I, now that there's been some time in between there, I'm like, oh, like, I think I was just overloaded with telling the same stories over and over again to, like, I don't know, 20 people at each event I went to. So I was like, this is a little bit much. And maybe I went to too many events for the kind of interaction I wanted to have. But I realized later, like, I was being a little whiny.
Yeah. Well, maybe you should just, you're not there yet, but when you get older, you'll talk about the weather a lot. And then after you talk about the weather, then you'll start talking about your doctor appointments and your aches and pain. Like, that's what you hear people talk about. And that's their world, is like, what is the weather going to be today? And do I have a doctor's appointment? And, like, man, my hip is hurting. Yeah. Like, that's what life becomes. So when you're telling a story, you can be like, have you done this? Like, you're good at, because you do the podcast, you're good at engaging questions to other people. And I just want to get people into, like, what are you interested in? How do you envision, if you had a full-time free day, what would you do? I look at my retirement as a week. I don't think about it one day at a time, because that's too much to, like, calculate each week. I'm just like, what am I going to do this week? What things do I want to do? Just last night, I was thinking, maybe I should set Tuesday for, like, a task day to actually get things done. Because, mm-hmm. like, I don't, like, in retirement, retired people, like, I did three things today. That's a real day. Like, if you went out and did three things, like, that's serious commitment day. And
that's
so
big.
It's not fake. I did three things yesterday and I was proud because two of them were on my list for, like, a month and a half. And I just ran the errands. And so I used to say selfish, and someone said, you can't say that word now because modern times selfish is bad. So I said, what about self-focused? Like, we do a lot of stuff that's self-focused. That's if you have interests. Some people would say it's purpose, but I don't know. I just think it's an interest. And also, people talk about being retired as having freedom. And yeah, but now I think my new word might be ability. You have the ability of time to do things. The question is, do you do it? Like, I definitely didn't go to the cell phone store and get my mom's phone fixed right away, but I had the ability to do that. But I finally did it yesterday and I felt so proud, like, oh, you spent the half an hour and got this task done.
We have a lot of similarities. So when you say that, I'm like, yeah, maybe three things in one day, but only one hard one. But today, like, this was the big activity. Like, I have to make sure I have energy and we can have a good conversation. I made a few notes ahead of time, you know.
I kind of scratched those off. I'm like, let's talk about this instead. And you're like, shit, I actually did some prep. But, you know, I think it's still you're giving, right? You're giving to other people. You're trying to bring awareness and topics and interests and discussions to people. So there is external stuff. So it's not all self-centered. It's not all, but it can be self-nourishing, I think. Another thing I talk about is two things that are funny to me. One is I have a schedule. So I just kind of sketch out my week and I move stuff around. There's no schedule. Like, I have three actual committed time appointments today. That, like, is way too structured, but I'm good with it because it's talking with you and it's something for the Rock Retirement Club. And then one is a kid says learning thing, which I'll do on the Peloton bike and I'll double down that hour. But one is a schedule. And the other thing is I don't have a to-do list. I have a don't forget list. So I just put stuff in my list so I don't forget it, but there's, like, no time commitment to do it. And then once it's on the list, I'm like, oh, I'm good. It's there. I'll get to it when I get to it. And I don't want commitments. And that's being... Well, not having children helps you not have other people commitments. My wife's super laid back. She's like, at some point, could you do this? And I go, is the some point like in 2 hours or 2 days or 2 weeks? She's like, before tomorrow morning. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Sometime.
Set expectations. All right. So we have to wrap it up. We have like one or two other topics we can kind of get into a little bit more. You mentioned them a bit in passing. So one is just optimization and kind of like letting optimization go, especially 12 years in from retiring. So that's one area. The other, again, is purpose. And I think, again, you and I, maybe in common, we don't have the same kind of, I guess, need or desire to find the specific purpose. Maybe we're just semantically tricking ourselves and there's something deeper, but I'll leave it up to you. Which one do you want to talk about here?
I'm just going to say that for me, curiosity replaces purpose. I don't care what letter the P size is. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't have purpose anxiety. I'm curious all the time. Pete talked about being curious. He talked about digging deep into topics. I like learning about things, understanding things. And so that serves my day well. The other thing about curiosity is it can last your entire life. You can always be gaining from that.
Go a little bit deeper for the people that you're referencing, Doc G's book, Purpose, and the big P and little P. And people can go a little bit deeper and check out the interview that I did with him, but talk about how curiosity is working for you and maybe give an example too. Let's go deeper.
Quickly, I think to me, your personality, if you're an internal type person versus an external type person, not introvert or extrovert, I think those might be different where you get energies. But let's say you worked in a career where you were giving to others and you worked on teams and you were leading teams or you were helping customers or clients. I feel like that's very external effort and delivery. And I think that type of profession or lifestyle, I think, tends to lead towards a purposeful driver for people. Whereas mine was, I was a computer guy and I was an only child who did my own things. So it was more internal interests. And I think those interests are what keep me, I would say, interested in things, motivated. I don't even know if it's motivated. But so the question is, do I have purpose? Do I think playing guitar is purpose? No, it's an interest. Is it a passion? No, it's just an interest. Do I like researching different topics and understanding things? Yes. Is that a purpose? No, researching is not a purpose to me. It's a curiosity. And to lead towards the optimizing piece, there's all these optimizations we do in FIRE, getting to FIRE, like your savings rate. I have no idea what my savings rate is. I had no idea what my tax savings were on my 401k deferrals until just recently when I looked back for the previous years of what the tax brackets were, the 28 or whatever, 30 something. I think I was in 25 and 28 back then. And so I deferred that. And I did that after thinking about it a little while. Now I read Sean and Cody's book, Retiring Tax Planning to and Through Early Retirement or something. And they have different scenarios. And so I thought about the optimization stuff. And internally, I like figuring it out. It's curious. I like calculating because my brain works that way. I like the results because the results may mean more of our assets stay with us if I pay the correct amount of taxes optimized each calendar year from the past 12 years through the future. But a certain level of optimizing how much Roth conversion do I want to do to show ordinary income is not going to make or break a plan at all. It's not going to make a huge difference to the hogs later because it's not that much in those accounts. And it takes a lot of time. So just having an understanding, like doing 80%, you do 20% of the effort, get 80% of the results, one of those kind of Pareto things, I like doing. I just learn about it. So we spend so much time optimizing. It's better to, for me, it's better to build a structure that's sound and good with 20% effort and gives me most of the protection and planning is how I see it. And that's, this is such a random thought. Sorry to throw this in, but is the case studies. Everybody's gung-ho on case studies. It's like voyeurism, like take it all off and show me your numbers. Well, first of all, each person's numbers is totally specific to, like, okay, those are different numbers if you take it off and show me your numbers. But those are different. Like each person's numbers are so unique to them and their situation. And then people calculate their numbers against your numbers. And their situations may be similar, maybe totally different. And then the worst part of a case study to me is that, well, I shouldn't even be blowing this out, is that the people giving you advice might be in a totally different situation and are so experienced in their situation that they look at your situation first through their structure and then try to fit or their calculations or their equations and fit it onto you with some adjustment. And it's really important to have someone in a similar situation talk about their structure that you can fit in with your structure, not someone who's going to say, well, you're going to spend less than you're spending now when you're retired, and your returns are going to be more than you think because you should just do more equity because you're young, which isn't exactly going to fit everybody. And so case studies to me are super hard. It's better to find a mentor, someone who you like their perspective, just like Mark and I had a retirement planner that we wanted to see their structure fit into our numbers versus a financial planner. I know you have Steve, which gave you guys, is it Steve? He gave you this framework and this structure. And it was like, okay, a real person who's seen tons of people's data could tell us our data looks good and aligned going into the future. That's kind of what we had from a different perspective, because spreadsheets, you could trick those formulas any way you want. So that's why I think optimizing is interesting if you're curious, but the structure is good. And most people listening to this have already built so much structure, it's all solid.
We can keep talking all day long, but I know we have to end it. We do have a cool sound check coming up, and I'll lead into it. And perhaps the most important question, what's your number one guitar? What's the one that you go to just if you're like, hey, I'm just going to play for a few minutes? What do you pick up?
I have Charvels and I love them because they're high output, easy play, like a dream guitar for a low amount of money. I love them.
Awesome. Very good. Kevin, it's been a lot of fun and I hope to see you soon, buddy. I think, are you going to Economy? Are we going to see each other in Cincinnati?
Yeah, this is so ridiculous. I have 11 trips in 13 months and I'm not like a super traveler. It's just, I said, hell yes. So I have Emma told me, I'll see you in February, March, April, May, and then July or something.
She's doing all those too. Yeah.
She's doing, yeah. Emma's balancing the life now logically and having experiences with Phi family. And in the future, she's doing both and she's doing it very well.
Very cool. Awesome. We'll probably have a couple links. You do have a blog out there if people want to dig deeper. Send me the stuff and I'll link up. Where do you want people to go to connect with you, or if you want that to happen? You don't have to.
You know, probably the easiest email I have is kevin@rockretirementclub.com.
Okay.
Just because it sounds normal. That's the easiest one to find.
Perfect. And any other links, send them to me and I'll put them in the description. So if people want to check out what you have worked on or whatever, they can look for
it. It's not work. It's just random thoughts. That's all I share.
Kevin, thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for sharing all this stuff with everybody, because the voices and ideas, pieces fit with so many different people. You have no idea what you do. It's very rewarding for everybody. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. So you were just telling me that you have a play check, which we'll probably talk about in the episode, so we won't dig into it. But let's talk a little bit about what you have spent the money on. So you mentioned health, fitness, music, basically just extra stuff. So you're earning a little bit of money that's unexpected. So can you tell me about some of the most fun things that you have spent that money on?
So I didn't expect to receive any money or income in retirement. So when it happened, I decided to take all that money and each month after paying self-employment tax and spend it. And it doesn't have to be spent that month. I track it. But I did buy Marshall Stack full-on amp, like behind me. It's like a concert-level arena amp. I've bought a couple e-bikes. I've bought a scooter like a Vespa. I've bought guitars. I'm looking at my list because I bought a PA for my music room so that my electric drums, which I'm a disaster at, I have a PA. And then, you know, I buy, if my Apple Watch last week was, the battery was getting low after 3 years, I would buy a new one that I probably wouldn't have bought even being fired. And so I use that. My Oura Ring was going low. So things that I wouldn't buy normally, it's just a freedom to use that. And I require that I use it. Oh, and I give, what's nice is I give a lot of it away. I've been gifting more to different people and different things. And I talked on that I gift differently, but we can always talk about that some other time.
Very cool. So one question about the stack, the Marshall Stack. So it's 100-watt Marshall Stack. And for the people that don't understand, that literally, like, you could play like a stadium with that.
It would work in a like a basketball stadium, okay. But you could play like those 3,000 seat like auditorium places with more than enough power. So I put it at 2 and the walls vibrate. Okay. Like the sheetrock starts shaking.
Yeah.
And but it just, I always wanted one, so I just did it.
Do you have any idea the decibel level that it's hitting? Does your watch like freak out? It's like, oh my God, this is 120. Oh, yeah.
Even when I have it on 1.5, my watch says high set hearing protection warning. And it's not that loud, but it's just got 8 speakers. And every time you play a chord, it kind of thumps. I used to say my little amp would growl, my little Marshall. And this one kind of barks.
Gotcha.
Like it jumps out. It's amazing. I sound better because of it, which doesn't make any sense, but it's true. You just sound different, and different things come out of your fingers with different amps and different guitars, which I'm not a good guitar player, but
yeah,
I'm loud if I want.
Very loud. Well, and like you're saying, I mean, with the four, it's 8 speakers, they're 12 inches. So like it moves air. So like if you're, when you're standing and you're, is it just like in a normal size room?
It's in an 8x10 bedroom.
Okay.
But it's so at funny. The corner, so it kind of, it's not straight out. It's at an angle. That's my theory.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, well, and I was going to say, we could talk like all day on this, and we have gone on hikes and just talked about guitars and stuff. But the other question, because I'm looking to get like a slightly larger amp. I have a 15-watt Blues Junior, kind of an entry level. But what Marshall did you have before you got your stack there?
I have a second Marshall in a different room. It's a 40-watt. It's a DSL 40 CR. And it's cool because the 40-watt has a switch that you can cut it down to 20 watts. So instead of using 2 power tubes, you use 1. The 40 watts are, I keep that on like 3 in the 20-watt mode. And so it's a 112 combo. And what I like about both of my amps are they have multiple channels. They each have 4 channels. My little combo for DSL 40 has 4 channels and a switch for 4 channels, from clean to AC/DC to heavy metal to like super metal. And you could dial those in. My big Marshall Stack has 4 channels. Each of them have 3 zones in them. So it's like ridiculous. But so I love, like, if you want to play out and play a big place, you could play with a 40-watt easily. Even a 20-watt, a real 20-watt amp is going to have tons of power. Like, you could hear it on your 15. It's loud.
Right. Yeah. And the interesting thing, and you know this, but the listeners don't, like the wattage versus the volume is not linear. So like to get like twice as loud, you need to like 10x the wattage. Yeah. So, I mean, you could hear the difference between my 15 watt and your 40 watt, but it's like minuscule. Like,
and I think the difference is it breaks up. It starts to distort as you turn it up. What did one of the guitar players said, like, the magic volume on an amp is like the 2 o'clock setting. That's where it like just it breathes, and then it doesn't overly overdrive it higher. I still turn mine up to 10, to break them up. But so like if you can get an amp that you love its volume, like at home around a two o'clock, which is probably around 7 out of 10, or live, then that's supposed to be the sweet spot. But those are people that know I'm just a heavy metal guy, so it's all
right. Yeah, you just crank it up. You're using that
40 watts is loud.
Yeah.
40 watt amp is loud.
Very good. Yeah, like I said, we could talk all day, but it's fun to geek out about the details, especially.
This is life and fire, right? This is when you have time and resources to add to a passion or an interest, you can dig into these things. And sometimes you dig in too much.
I'm like, I play with my friend Tyler every now and then. Pete will play bass occasionally. And that's like basically what I'm looking at. And what I have is perfectly adequate for that. But I have looked, I'm like, oh, well, I have like the Fender sound, but I don't have a Marshall sound. And I have seen some of the DSL like 20, you know, that half power thing is key because like, you only want to be so loud, even with like extra hearing protection and all that stuff. It could be a little bit much, but it is fun to crank it up. There's no substitute. It is.
And it's nice with a foot switch because you play, I mean, just talking with you, you play so many different styles of music, and having four channels, you can bounce from Alice in Chains down to your clean playing, and you could do so much just with one amp without having modelers and foot switches and boards and everything.
Yeah. Which
I have those too, of course.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many things to get.
Yeah. Like, it's like cycling, right? They have all these bikes, even though it's really just two wheels and handlebars. People have all these bikes.
Endless.